Hello, and welcome to Faithfully Memphis. This is the Reverend Laura F. Geddes, Associate Rector at Grace St. Luke's Episcopal Church in Midtown Memphis, a church that seeks to be a community of hope, longing, and healing. And all are welcome to join us anytime at GSL, and particularly at 10 a.m. during these summer Sundays. I serve as clergy for community engagement and congregational development, which means that I have the wonderful opportunity to connect and be connected with our wider members of the community. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. on WYXR 91.7 FM, we bring community leaders near and far to discuss how faith and the creative has played a role in their lives. And today I have the privilege and true delight to be with Ann Perry Wallace. Ann is a Memphis actor and writer of fiction plays and children's stories, and she is an all-round fantastic and creative human, making Memphis and the world a more authentic and true place for the rest of us through her storytelling and the creative. Ann has been a company member of the improv group Playback Memphis and has been in theater and on the stage for years. She holds a bachelor's degree in theater from UT Chattanooga and worked in theater in Chicago for 15 years. And she was last seen in Tennessee Shakespeare's To Kill a Mockingbird. Her new one-person show, Live Rich, Die Poor, which opens this weekend, is based on the life of Zora Neale Hurston, the famed folklorist and Harlem Renaissance writer, and is a, quote, a call to action to empty yourself of all your talent and deny the grave your gifts and determine your worth for yourself, end quote. Welcome, Anne. It is great to be with you.
Thank you so much. It's so good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Honored. Looking forward to the conversation.
Me too.
So I wanted to start out first by asking you, what, if any, spiritual or religious shapings did you have growing up? Any particular figures in your life that shaped you, that have helped to make you who you are today?
Yes, I grew up in a Christian home with parents who were active in the church and who both also grew up in Christian homes. And I spent a lot of time in church on Sundays and Sunday nights and Wednesday nights. I even remember going to a foot washing service with my grandmother at her church. I remember that time fondly because it would be my grandmother and all the other missionaries, and then I would be with her. And so I got to sing in the little old lady choir. I remember an old rugged cross. So I grew up in a Christian home with Christian family and values, and what I consider, real Christians.
Mm-hmm. Was there a particular denomination of your church that you were in?
Yes. My parents grew up in Church of God in Christ, Kojic. Mm-hmm. My grandmother did too. And so we eventually went to what is just holiness. Same kind of values, but non-denominational. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it sounds like your grandmother was a big influence on you.
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. A very deep woman of faith, just like my parents. Mm-hmm. You know, they're praying people. Mm-hmm. My mother has this saying, when you call and ask and for prayer and you want to talk about a situation, she has this saying she got from her mother, which is, ask the Savior to help you. Mm-hmm. But she sings it.
Oh, wow. Lovely.
So I won't try to do that, but.
You don't want to sing today?
Well, not today.
All right. Fair enough. Well, let's talk about Live Rich, Die Poor. This is a one-woman play that you wrote, that you are in. Mm-hmm. It is you.
It is you,
Anne. What does the world need to know about Zora Neale Hurston? Mm-hmm. What does the world what do we need to know? Share a little bit about this one-woman play.
Yeah, so Zora Neale Hurston is this iconic writer from the Harlem Renaissance who focused on Black culture. And she's unique for me because she grew up in the first Black incorporated town.
Eatonville, right?
Yes, mm-hmm. In the United States. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of like a bubble, this kind of isolated, I shouldn't say isolated, but insulated life. And idyllic up until a point where her mother died. And so I think that shaped her and her writing, you know, the saying about write what you know. Mm-hmm. And so they took on this journey where she ended up writing and really valued the country people she came from. As I often say, she thought, which is not an original quote, but she thought country folk were worthy of literature mm-hmm. in a time where that wasn't valued. She had a lot of criticism for that writing. But I love her trailblazing. I love the confidence to write in the dialect of the people, mm-hmm. No matter what other folks thought. And she's interesting as a writer because she was also an anthropologist.
Yeah, that's some of her background in her studies, right?
Yes, mm-hmm. yes, at Barnard College mm-hmm. under mm-hmm. Franz Boas. And so I just found her really interesting when my friend, probably 30 years ago at Roosevelt University had a graduate course and had to read Their Eyes Were Watching God and finished the course and handed me the book and said, you need to read this. Mm. And that started it all.
That started it.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay. We'll talk about the title of the play, Live Rich, Die Poor. Say more about what that means and what you're trying to mean by it.
Yeah. So I had been collecting information and research on Zora for 20 years probably, and trying to figure out what's the story I wanted to tell about her. And I knew I didn't want to just do a rehash of her timeline. And so it hit me that in my research, she was always emptying herself out of these stories. Mm-hmm. Even up until she died, she was trying to write a novel about Herod the Great. And I got to get these stories out. And so it hit me that living a rich life and dying empty is something to be valued in the way that we don't take our riches, our gifts, our talents to the grave with us. I heard this saying that the richest place on earth is a graveyard because there are all the unwritten books and the cures that people didn't come up with and all the chances they didn't take. And so poor is really a play on words, which means you use it all here and there's nothing left. So I use her life to bring forth that theme of living rich and dying poor.
In other words, giving it your all, your fullest gifts, your best self, all mm-hmm. that you have in this world so that, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because that is to benefit us and it is to benefit all the people around us. Imagine if everybody did that.
Imagine. I like that. And maybe that's part of the invitation for those that come to watch to think about for themselves as well as what would happen for the community and world if we all just did this a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
What a kind of changed place this might be. Yeah.
Yeah. And I can't think of a better word. It doesn't quite capture, but not haunted, but I think driven to do that, to live in a rich way in which I pour out everything that I have and that when, you know, I take my last breath, I have sufficiently done what I was supposed to do.
I like that, Anne. I like that.
Yeah.
It sounds like to me then, and tell me if I'm hearing you correctly, that there is a sense of urgency mm-hmm. with this for sure.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. All we have is today. You know, we have the present. We don't know about tomorrow, living our best and fullest right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And what comes to mind is significance and legacy.
Mm-hmm.
That I did something significant and I left something mm-hmm. behind. I want my life to have meaning and to have had meaning.
A little bit about the overview of the play itself. Alice Walker is a part of this play. Is that correct? Because she discovers.
She comes to know Zora's work and to be fascinated and enthralled by it. As a matter of fact, I don't know if you've heard her quote where she says, "There is no book more important to me than Their Eyes Were Watching God." That's a big statement, you know. So in 1973, she goes on a search for Zora's unmarked grave to honor her with a tombstone. And so the story goes, she's pretending to be Zora's niece to get access, right?
And so
she finally gets to the place and she's trying to follow the directions. And she says in the story that she and her friend are running out of time. It's getting dark. And she's like, "Zora, help us. Where are you?" And, you know, they joke like, you know, "Really, please don't answer. But, you know, we need to find you." And so she trips over the place where her unmarked grave is, and she puts a tombstone there, and it says, "Genius of the South." And so in my story, my premise is that while she's looking for this unmarked grave, she accidentally awakens her. And the story ensues.
That's so good. That's so creative. Right? And then it unfolds, right?
Yeah, because Alice is like, you're iconic. You did this. You lived this rich life. And in the story, Zora has been in her state of death and does not remember this rich life. And then she died in poverty, and that's what she remembers. And she's like, no, I didn't live rich. And so she has to retrace her life to rediscover and reimagine and process some things. And along the way, there are a lot of stories and a lot of characters.
And all those characters are depicted through you. You are channeling them, right, in this play? And
I am. I think I added up that there may be like 17 characters that I'm playing. And that has been a journey through the direction of my director, Karan Samuel. She has been pulling out a nuanced performance from me. And that's what I ask her for. So I am grateful.
So if you were to pull a theme, a topic, a theme from the play, and none of us have seen it yet, so I'm excited about it, but it sounds like there would be themes, something around voice, power, vulnerability, strength, oppression. Any particular theme or of those, or another one that I haven't named that speaks in that moment, as well as how it might also be pulling in and speaking to you and us now, how it continues and relates?
Definitely. I think obviously denying the grave your gift is one, but then there's also standing in your power. For me, tapping into my higher power to believe in myself and to know that I'm, as I mature, I'm looking at all these gray hairs, and I'm telling myself, I'm still worthy. I'm still valuable. I still have something to say. I have people who will be ignited by what I have to offer and inspired. So the message is looking at Zora's life, how she pushed through so many things to pour out these stories. I think you're going to see Zora pushing through, but at the same time, you're going to see Anne pushing through. Because to do the work that I'm doing requires me to push against you know, some stereotypes about an aging woman, or as I like to say, maturing.
I like it. Yep.
A maturing woman, and what I should be looking toward. So that is definitely a message, but that is one that is for women my age, but that is for anyone.
Yep.
Is to realize for yourself you're valuable. And you're the first person that has to believe that before anyone else does. And if no one else does, you make sure you do.
We're going to pause with that bit of wisdom, and we're going to break for a moment, and then we'll be back to continue this thoughtful conversation with Anne Perry Wallace.
Memphis-based Black arts and culture organization Tone is back with their annual Juneteenth celebration, featuring a week filled with events centered around African-American heritage and creativity. This year's theme is BAPS, exploring Black royalty and regalia. The week kicks off on June 15th with a screening of the movie BAPS. Daily events include a spades tournament, gala, after party, and outdoor festival. Musical acts at the festival include Project Pat, Duke Deuce, Hit Kid, Goddessy, Taliba Sophia, and WYXR's own Kai the God. For more information, visit ToneJuneteenth.com.
So we are back. Good to be back with you, Anne. And we had paused for a moment, and we're returning back to hearing, I hope, some more. Let's keep unpacking a bit about you and Zora and the journey that you all have been on together in this playtime and the writing and the performance time. And it surely sounds like, I mean, she is continuing to guide you, invite you. And we were talking while we were offline a bit about some of the pressures that she withstood in terms of showing courage and her sense of self to write the way she wanted to write.
Mm-hmm.
Will you share a little bit more about that and all the forces, a little bit about where she was coming from and moving to Harlem and what that meant then for her?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, Alice Walker likes to say that Zora had good racial health, or mm-hmm. she wasn't indoctrinated into inferiority. And there's something to be said about this insulated town she came from, because she didn't have, I guess, the racial eyes on her. She grew up free. Her identity was formed outside of race, which is something that we don't talk about a lot, or I don't hear about a lot, how my identity is formed by a lot of things, but the society as well. So when she got to Harlem and started writing about what she knew, which was, Black culture and country Black folk, because she's like one of the leading most collector of Black folk tales. And so thanks to her, those stories aren't lost. But during the time that she was in the Harlem Renaissance, she was criticized for her work. Her writing was even called clownish, buffoonery, because there wasn't the respect for these country folk who she thought were worthy of literature. But she did think they were. And so she stood her ground. She endured the criticism. She even refused to allow publishers to publish what has now been published posthumously, which is Barracoon, because they wanted her to change the voice of the main character to standard American English. And she refused to do that because Cudjoe Lewis didn't speak that way. She mm-hmm. respected how he spoke as being good enough.
And changing that would have done some dishonoring in that way.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. It would have mm-hmm. dishonored him. It would say, the way that you speak isn't good enough, so we're going to change it. We're going to fix it.
But it meant that she wasn't published in terms of that publication, right?
No, yeah. that book should have been her first published book, but she went on to publish Jonas Gord Vine first, and never got to see Barracoon being published.
But it has been published?
It has. It has been. Okay. And I want to guess and say maybe 5 years ago that it was published. And it's an interesting read, and tragic in a lot of ways, but beautiful the way that she met Cudjoe Lewis and got to know him. They would exchange fruit. She'd bring him watermelon, and he'd give her peaches, and they talk about his life, which is so interesting. He was captured by the Dahomey 50 years after the transatlantic slave trade was outlawed. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's another story.
That's another story. That sounds like a powerful story. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Mm. Let's see. We were talking some about your growing up in the Christian faith, mm-hmm. and particularly Kojic, and shared how your spiritual journey has done some shaping of where you are and who you are today. Mm-hmm. But we were talking a little bit earlier about how your own spirituality and journey has areas of congruence as well as incongruency mm-hmm. with Zora Neale Hurston mm-hmm. And her journey. And I wondered if you might share a little bit about that as well, because that seemed to be something that had been speaking to you when you wondered aloud, and I thought, ooh, let's talk some more about that.
Yeah, it's always an interesting thing to approach a script and get into a character who is not like you. You know, I remember being a young actress and thinking, oh, I could never play that because, you know, something about them made me, I was taken aback. And so I to learn that Zora abandoned her faith after, you know, being raised by Christian parents, I thought, wow, I don't want to, you know, judge her because I'm going to be playing her. And I can't be inside her and have Anne's judgment. So I released that as, you know, this is the work of an actor. But it was, there was some tension inside. And so I had to make peace with, she was a different kind of woman, irreverent and, you know, just big and body. And that was okay. And I look at her life and I can see why she may have turned her back. You know, there's this thing that we talk about now called church hurt.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know about church hurt.
Yes.
And so she had probably church hurt through her father. He was a preacher, but he was not faithful to her mother. She endured what we would most assuredly know now as you know, childhood trauma.
Yes.
By losing her mother early and being abandoned mm-hmm. By her father. So I look at her with eyes of compassion now, and I've gotten through that tension. Although there's some areas that I have to push through still as an actress to get a little more free mm-hmm. to portray them. And so that's part of the work, though. That's part of the work as an actress. But I did hold a lot of tension around that. But I think the freer I've come and the more accepting I've come makes it a much better, richer performance.
It sounds like it.
Yeah.
It sounds like it, for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
The more we talk, the more I'm aware of the journey that you have been on and that you're beautifully sharing it with us and how... she still continues to speak and talk and inform you and how you are trying then to show that on stage with this performance and make some powerful connections for all of us to be invited into.
You know, when I first started this journey, it was just about Zora's journey. But the more this unfolds for me, I realize how it's the two of us.
Yeah.
And a lot of the things that I'm showing through her life on stage, I'm walking out in my life as well. And it's so funny how that unfolds for you, that, you know, I can write something and then have something be in there that reveals itself to me.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And so those things are unfolding, you know, and when I look at my life and I look at her life and making my peace with being a very different person from her, but being on a similar journey.
It sounds like y'all are and have been a team for a bit, learning together, growing with each other, listening. And I mm-hmm. think that's at the heart of where so much connection and community comes from. And tell me your thoughts on this. But in terms of community, like, it's how we tell our stories and it's how we listen to one another and what happens when we don't listen to one another and where those connections can have barriers thrown up in a way where we miss out. We don't hear the truths. And because from my perspective as a Christian as well, from the Episcopal tradition, you know, we all carry truth, but none of us has all the truth.
That's right.
And so seeing the value in each person and hearing their story and being open to being shaped and changed by it is always important. And it's hard. It may mean there's some discomfort, but it also means there's the potential for transformation as well if we're open to it.
That's so true. And I'm going to probably mess up her name, but one of the writers that I just love the most is Chimamanda Adichie. And I may be leaving out a part of it, but I first got introduced to her by her TED Talk when she talks about the danger of a single story. And I was just blown away, instant fan. But it's so true how we can have this story in our mind. I mean, just this, just if you take it to the simplest level, a coworker that's always late, and you always got to cover for him. And he's late every day, and you're aggravated until you find out he's caring for a wife with cancer. The whole story shifts then, doesn't it? When we understand and when we listen to someone else's story, it just has the power to instruct and teach and impact. And the journey for me right now is part of my mission is to ignite.
Nice word. Yeah. I like that.
Because I've been ignited, and I want to do that for I want to do that for other folks. Yeah,
it's going to be good. It's going to be good. I can tell. Getting all excited more and more for sure. For sure. So let's talk a little bit about your creative life, timing wise. You've mentioned a little bit that this play is kind of comes at a pivotal marker time in your life. In this moment, No Limits. No Need for Waiting, I Am Creative. And there's some connections that I was hoping you might also want to talk about a little bit with Sheila Turns 50.
Okay.
I thought that might be some good conversation as well. So you mentioned that you were daring to confront the stereotypes of being an aging actress. Wisdom, beauty, insights. You talked about some gray hair. Appreciate that, as I know some of that myself. But yeah, this timing-wise, this is kind of a pivotal marker time.
It is, and so what I've been thinking around that is that this show that I created and wrote, because my phone wasn't ringing, because I wasn't getting roles and opportunities that other people were getting or I thought that I should get. And it's easy for an actor to just say, you know, I just need to get another agent. But I thought, let me think about what I can create for myself. And just the act of creating something for myself was so freeing and empowering and just a gift from God. And I literally remember praying because I wanted to tell this story so bad. I said, God, please don't let me die without, you know, finishing this story or getting it out there. And God was faithful in that area, as he's faithful in all the areas. But that came to fruition. And so this journey of realizing that as I mature and age and society sees me a certain way as sometimes invisible, sometimes they're not enough stories. I can now say through this gift from God that I have created something that empowers me and reminds me, you are definitely valuable. You definitely have a God-given talent. You are worthy. And my life now testifies of that. And so that is that duality of me trying to show Zora's life to testify of it while presenting it as someone whose life also testifies of it. And being able to say that out loud is another thing, because there used to be a time where if I said something positive about myself, I almost wanted to shrink. Mm-hmm. But that's another thing that I want to be an example of. Stop shrinking.
Claiming, standing,
yeah.
Naming.
Yes. Owning it, standing in it.
Do you think this play could have happened for you 20 years ago?
Oh my gosh. No. Mm-hmm. No, and I was trying to write it 20 years ago, but I think God and God's infinite wisdom knew that I needed some more life and some more experiences, maybe even some more challenges and pain to be able to walk through, you know, all the edges of the story that I had to tell, and to be a witness myself. And so the maturity that I've gone through, I've been saying, this story and who I am ready for such a time as this, because this culmination of who I have become or I am becoming is right on target with the story. It's, you know, it's like dual lives.
So in other words, things have just led up to this moment in time and place and the story moment for you with everything that has been to be mm-hmm. here now.
And yes, and prepared me to be able to do these 17 characters in this this story.
So admiring. Wow.
I mean, so the life that I've lived helps me get into the nuance mm-hmm. of who all these characters are. Really, Laura, I feel like it's drawing out the performance of a lifetime for me. Mm-hmm. Not to say that it's the pinnacle, but for now.
For now, maybe it is.
For now, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's a part of claiming and naming and saying right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I honor that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything, do you want to say something more about Sheila Turns 50 and the ST50 movement?
Oh,
would that
yeah.
be something good to spotlight
yes,
and illuminate?
Thank you. Thank mm-hmm. you for reminding me. So a couple of years ago, on this journey of maturing and wanting to amplify my own voice, I came up with Sheila Turns 50, which is a movement to amplify the voices of the maturing woman. And so I've started out.
I like that better than aging. Yeah. I like maturing. I like maturing.
Mm-hmm. It's much better. Mm-hmm. It sounds, you know, it sounds better.
I'm going to use that.
Yes. So I have started this movement that will empower women to find out what it is that you're thinking you're done with, but you're not. You know, even if you're a retired math teacher and the kids in the neighborhood need some math instruction, or if you are, you know, an actress who thinks you're too old to get roles, but there's really a story in you that you could tell. And so I've started with a private Facebook page, and I share wisdom about, you know, what's your story? What do you still have to offer? From things like that to, hey, this is what I heard works for hot flashes. Mm-hmm. just all the things from, you know, are the kids leaving the nest or are they coming back, you know? And so all the things that just the range of things. And so we'll have our first event this year. We're shooting for October, and we're just going to call it a Sheila Turns 50 birthday party for all the women who are about to turn 50, turning 50, or have been, you know, reveling in those early 50s for a while. There's a lot of wisdom that'll be in that room.
Sounds like it.
Yeah.
You want to share any information if people were wanting, mm-hmm. women were wanting to dial into this, or
yeah.
is there a site, or you said social
yes.
media?
You can go to the liverichdiepoor.org page, mm-hmm. and all upcoming events will be there.
Okay.
So you can read about Live Rich, Die Poor, Zora's story. You can read about Sheila Turns 50 and the upcoming events, and you can even get tickets and connect with me.
That's right. All right. It's a great site. I've been there myself.
Ah.
Yes. Let's see. I'm aware of our time, and there's never enough time.
I know.
Where do you find your joy, Anne? Where do you find your joy?
Yeah. Traveling. I love to travel. I love to read. I love to get lost in a story. And my family and my friends. I love my family and my friends and deep laughter. I always say after a big belly laugh that, you know, whoever made me laugh, you just added 5 years to my life. Because it feels so good to laugh hard. And I do that a lot with the people that I love. And so I know that's another thing. The wisdom of age is knowing where the value is. It's not in the material stuff. It's not in, you know, expensive purses. I don't mind an expensive purse, but I'm saying.
I know. I like some good shoes, too. So
thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the real thing that when I leave here, I know that I'm going to wish that I had spent all the time I could with those people that I love and saw the world and poured out my stories.
And listened to their stories and connected. There it is again. Storytelling and listening and community coming that way. And so that to you is a source of joy as well, which all seems connected and makes total sense to me, especially in light of our conversation today.
It is. I have some really good friends. I don't know if they would say I'm high maintenance, but
good friends tell us exactly. They don't hide. And that's why they're good friends.
That's right.
Why you just have a few of those.
I know. Yeah. But they pour into me. Mm-hmm. And they're very giving. And I love that. I love that community.
Nice. I'm glad you have those. Good. And laughter and traveling, all the things you just named. Joy. It's important. And I think joy is subversive as well. And has the possibility of working to continue our resilience as we go out into the world, doing our thing, sharing our stories, naming the names, using our voice, and helping the world become a better place.
I'm glad you said that word subversive, and I agree wholeheartedly in everything that you just said. Another thing I didn't name that is subversive for me is that embracing myself as an attractive and sexy and sensual woman. It almost sounds like rebellion when you start to get the gray hairs that, I can still, rock a neckline that's not, a turtleneck.
That's about some claiming as well, isn't it?
It is about some claiming and reclaiming.
And reclaiming is well said. I agree. I think culture and society pressures us to, especially women of color, all types of women, but women in particular, to downplay and to lessen. And there's lots of layers to that. Many layers. But, in each season and stage, there are those pressures and how we respond to them or let them start to press down. But I hear and see, and y'all can't see me on the radio, but I'm doing lots of arm movement of like pushing off and pushing up and, saying no more pressure.
Mm-hmm. And subverting that thing of women of a certain age should. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Women of a certain age should do what they want to do.
Yeah. I have a wise mentor who said, we need to stop shooting on ourselves. Can I say that here?
Yeah.
Okay. And I like that. Stop shitting on yourself.
I like that too. It's so true. We need to be free.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Well, I have had the joy of asking you a lot of questions, and it would only be fair to see if you wanted to ask any questions of me, since you've been so kind and good to let me just let you take me on a journey and all of us. So.
Well, because of your role as and your title as a reverend, I got intrigued by an age-old question that I had since I was a child, which is, I am a woman of faith and believe in God and has seen God move in my life. But this question I asked when I was a little girl to my mom was, how was God always here? And I think the little girl in me is still so curious. Like, you know, everyone has a beginning, and, you know, our superheroes have origin stories. Mm-hmm. And my mom said, you know, it's just about faith. And if you think too hard about it, it'll blow your mind. And so, you know, I through the years, I have just leaned into my faith in God and my belief and seeing God move. Certainly, I know there is a God. But so back to the little girl in me wanting to know, how is God always here?
How is God always here? I know, right?
Yeah.
That's such a good question. And one that has been asked through the ages. Mm-hmm. And I think it's significant no matter what our age is. Mm. And I wonder, too, if with that question, it's always an evolving question as well. Mm-hmm. Because I think part of that question involves the journey of the asking and the wondering. So, I mean, at the heart of it, God is mystery. I'm just going to name that. So take anything away. God is mystery. Yeah. And there is both revelation in that, and there is deep unknowing in that. Mm. And it's both and. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think we as humans, at least I'll speak for myself, can take more comfort in one or the other, depending on what we feel like we need, depending on where we are in our life, with what we are having to encounter with our family, with our vocation, you name it. I think often when it comes to the origin of God and God's presence, that we as human beings, when you said it well, and your mom and this journey like kind of blows our minds, mm-hmm. like, because it does. But at the heart of it, it's still coming from our human minds and hearts. And the metaphor that I think of is an airport, where you can go at any moment of time, and for people, there are departures and there are arrivals. Mm-hmm. People are coming, people are going. And I kind of think of that a little bit from, you know, our human perspective. At any given moment, a person is having, you know, God is arriving for them, and they are seeing and experiencing God in ways through their child, through nature, through an amazing play performance. And for the person standing right beside them, something has had them feel like God is departing, has left the building. Mm. Where is God in all this?
Yeah.
And that's our human story. I mean, think about all our characters in scripture. Arrival stories of Christmas and the birth. I mean, that's a hello, God, here you are. But think about all the plenty ones, too, of Job and Jonah and Joseph, you know, when he is abandoned by his family. I mean, those are some departure stories, right?
Yeah.
But again, that's all from the perspective of our human minds and hearts.
Mm-hmm.
I would be reluctant to try and put words in God's mouth.
Yeah.
And yet, I'm about to say but. but I'm using the words that we have in Scripture. That I am who I am. I mean, God says, I am. Mm. All the while, God is.
Yeah.
And that doesn't change.
No.
How it began, how it ends, and everything in between, I am who I am.
Mm.
Always.
Yes.
And it's us and our human hearts and minds that kind of come and go, arrivals, departures, airports, you name it. But all the while, God is.
Mm-hmm. Mm. That's a word.
That's what I got for you today.
Yes.
Ask me tomorrow and maybe something different. But
that was a good word. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. You're welcome.
Let's take it back in time to cool summers by Mint Cream Market. Shop with Memphis artists and makers alike. It will feature music from WYXR DJs every last Saturday of the month starting June 24th at the High Cotton Brewery located in the Historic Edge District. Thanks to Mint Cream Market, Memphis Medical District Collaborative, and WYXR. More information at mintcreammarket.com.
So, we are back, and it's this weekend. This weekend and next are the performances for Live Rich, Die Poor,
yes,
right?
Yes.
7 p.m. at Theater South, at First Congo on Cooper Avenue. Mm-hmm. Tickets begin at $35 and can be purchased at liverichdiepoor.org.
Mm-hmm.
What else needs to be said about this, Anne?
The two Sunday performances are 2 p.m.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So the Friday and Saturday are 7 p.m. and the Sundays are 2 p.m. And I would like to add that every night we're honoring a different woman who embodies one of Zora's traits. So we have a Zeta, and Zora was a Zeta Phi Beta. We have a brilliant academic, Dr. Beverly Cross. We have a Queen Mother night. I'm honoring my mom that night. So cool. Michelle McKissick for trailblazing. We have a blackest and dopest. And that'll be Camilla Turner, who we're honoring. And we have a legend night, Eva Mosby. And so each night we're honoring a different woman who has a characteristic of Zora. And so I keep saying, I want to give these women their flowers now. You know, these are women who are on a path that I admire, and they're doing special stuff. And not all of them are in that maturing age category.
But they will be.
But they will be.
They will be. Learning now.
Yeah.
Giving thanks for those that are.
Mm-hmm.
Living richly.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and they are living rich. Mm-hmm. And I hope they know it.
It sounds like they're being honored and celebrated too, and that those ripples go out into the community and the connections. I love how you're taking Zora's attributes and sharing them with others and lifting them up. That's beautiful, Anne.
Yes.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yes.
Anne, this has been so lovely.
Oh, it has.
It has.
It really has.
Thank you for joining me today. It's been a day of a morning of incredible storytelling and connecting and claiming. And naming all the goodness that is right now. And you've invited me, and I know others who are listening and will listen, to be present to ourselves and how we can live richly and not thwart our gifts and use them in ways that we don't have all the time in the world to use. So
that
invitation is there, but it won't always be there. So the world needs us.
The world needs us, and our lives testify. People are watching us that we don't even know are watching us. And we're inspiring and igniting without even knowing.
Inspiring, igniting, and illuminating.
Yes.
All right, Anne. Well, you can listen to past episodes of Faithfully Memphis on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Please feel free to like and subscribe. This is Laura Geddes for Faithfully Memphis. Thanks for listening, and until next time, stay safe and stay positive.